Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Hulamin's Annual Results Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of today's presentation. If you should need assistance during the conference, please signal the operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'd like to hand the conference over to the CEO, Mr. Richard Jacobs. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our 2018 annual results presentation. I have on the call with me Anton Kril, who's our CFO, and I'll hand over to him after making some opening remarks and comments about market conditions. He'll then revert back to me to talk about the 2018 performance review and some growth opportunities going forward. And then I'll close before handing over to you for questions to prospects for the year ahead. We will be referring to the annual results presentation that was uploaded onto the investor section of our website at 11 o'clock, and I'll continually refer to page numbers. And Anton, if you can do the same as we page through the uploaded presentation. So the first comment that I would make is just to reflect on where we see Hulamin is in 2018. We continue with our focus on returning cash to shareholders. We're doing that, and we've continued to do that through maintaining our disciplined capital allocation approach. We have maintained our capital expenditure program and have remained disciplined in ensuring that we only allocate capital to our most important capital projects, and that is to keep our plants and operations in tip-top shape. Our capital expenditure in 2018 was reduced by 6%. We continue to pay down debt, and we've done that through a free cash flow delivery of just under R1 billion in 3 years. We also have raised our hurdle rate for improvement CapEx projects, that is to in line with our capital discipline approach, to make sure that only the most attractive projects and the quickest payback projects are approved, and that has been part of our progress in 2018. We also are announcing a share buyback program in addition to an increased dividend for 2018, and that's in line with this returning cash to shareholders program that I spoke about. The next point is that we are embarking on a new growth strategy. I'll talk about that in the growth section later, but a number of new profit pools are being addressed, and I'll give you more detail much later in the program. We maintained our focus during 2018 on operational excellence, and I'm again very proud of the team back in Pietermaritzburg who have once again produced a record operational performance. And as a consequence, the business is well placed to capitalize on any weakness in the Rand currency versus the US dollar, as we've seen from the second half of 2018 through to early 2019. I'm now going on to slide number 5, where I refer to the key features of the 2018 performance. The dividend is up 20% from 15 cents in 2017 to 18 cents a share, and in addition to that, we will be embarking on a 60 million rand share buyback program almost immediately. The record sales of 245,000 tons for the group was up by 12,000 tons on the 2017 performance, and in line with our operational performance, we achieved what we believe is a best-in-class safety performance of 0.24 total recordable incidents per 200,000 hours. The second half of 2018 was a record performance in all sales, production, and profit, and Anton will talk about the financial implications of that. As I referred to earlier, in line with our raising of our weighted average cost of capital and our tighter capital discipline approach, the review of the gap between our net asset value and market value has resulted in a significant impairment to net asset value of $1.45 billion, and that is spread in both rolled and extruded products. Our balance sheet strength remains. Our debt is at 8% compared to equity versus a 27% in 2017. Looking at market conditions as we move from 2018 into 2019, the LME aluminium price softened during the course of 2018, largely due to concerns about supply abating. However, geographic premiums have remained stable, albeit at high levels in the U.S., reflecting the import duty on aluminium into the United States. The U.S. Market conditions have started to soften. That particularly talks to some of our engineering exposure into the heat-treated plate and other common alloy markets in the United States. That is arising out of some softness in the aerospace industry, as well as some of our U.S. customers converting inventory into cash as the confidence in the market abates. Shifting across to our exposure to the beverage can market, which is more than 50% of our total sales, there's been quite a significant shift during 2018 as environmental concerns over single-use plastics have resulted in a significant concern about supply in aluminium. Aluminium demand is very strong, and most of our customers are looking to complete long-term contracts to ensure that their supply of rolled aluminium for the manufacture of beverage cans is secure going forward. Automotive demand for aluminium continues to grow as electric vehicle and concerns over carbon emissions for vehicles is continuing to grow. In the local market, other than the beverage can demand for aluminium, which is strong and getting stronger, the engineering, architectural, and other parts of the local manufacturing economy have remained stubbornly weak. The next chart on page 7 talks to the aluminium price that I referred to earlier. There you can see the green line is the Shanghai or Chinese aluminium price, which has softened through late 2017 and 2018. The LME and Midwest premium rose sharply towards the end of 18, but as I said earlier, has softened during the course of 2018. And there you can see a similar but more stable line in gray, which is the geographic premium in the United States. I'm now on slide number 8, and I'm going to hand over to Anton to talk through the financials of 2018.
Thank you, Richard, and good afternoon. I'm just going to move on to slide 9, just looking at some of the key points from a financial perspective. It was pleasing to note the further improvement in underlying operational performance in the business that resulted in normalized earnings improving by 20% on the prior year. And we certainly on track to deliver against the 2022 targets that we established and set out in the presentation a year ago. And I'll talk to that a bit later on. That's allowed us to generate further free cash flow from the business, $298 million. That's after adjusting for an in-transit cash receipt at the end of the year. And that's resulted in, Richard alluded to earlier, R1 billion free cash flow over the past 3 years. The improvement in CapEx management has allowed us to focus on the right capital expenditure, prioritize the things that are most important for the business, and maintain appropriate control. Richard mentioned that debt equity was at 8%. That's post the impairment charge that he spoke of. So debt is actually down, but due to the reduction in equity, debt equity is slightly up on the previous year. This improvement in free cash flow and this consistency over the last 3 years has allowed us to increase our dividend by 20% to 18 cents per share. 2016 and 2017 reflected dividends at a 7x cover. We've improved that to 5x. Of course, we continue with our target of 3x cover. And in addition, commenced a share repurchase program in the amount of 60 million rand. There was an impairment charge of 1.4 billion. That's 1.1 billion after tax, impacting both rolled products and extrusions. I think the important point to note is that underlying cash delivery is on course. And I'll talk to that just now in terms of setting out how we progressed against our targets to 2022. But as Richard mentioned, it was really the impact of the increased WACC, which has increased by 3.5%, which has resulted in that impairment. If I just move on to slide 10, just looking at some of the key features of the performance for the year. I think just looking at the top section of that page, the average LME aluminium price in dollars was higher than 2017, some 7% on average, and that was evident from the graph that Richard presented earlier. The exchange rate was very similar to 2017 at 13.25 on average for the year. Pleasing performance again in rolled products in particular, improving sales volumes up to 228,000 tons. It's some 6% better, and that resulted in group sales volumes of 245,000 tons for the year. Group turnover up 12% to 11.5 billion on the back of those improved volumes, as well as the higher average aluminium price, together with improved conversion fees, rolling margins. So all in all, a good performance. Just looking at profitability, and if I'm just refer you to that the numbers in the green block, and I'll start with, in fact, the numbers right at the bottom, the EBIT of negative 950 million for 2018 versus 498 in 2017. That's after the impairment charge of 1.451 billion. If one then adds that back, one gets to a headline EBIT number. In the 2018 year, that's 501, that's made up of the 497 before price lag and 4 million of price lag. In the prior year, it's 502 million, that's made up of 352 before price lag and 150 of price lag. So headline EBIT before metal price lag up 41%. After some normalizing adjustments, it's up 20%, which is pleasing. Then just dropping down to look at EBITDA, that's up 3% to 742 million. That's at a headline level, headline earnings per share at 91 cents, slightly down on the prior year, but on a normalized basis, and that's before metal price lag, up 20% to 77 cents per share. Moving on to slide 11, CapEx, well managed through 2018. An improvement in working capital efficiencies led to a improvement to 21% net working capital as a percentage of revenue. Free cash flow of 298, as I mentioned, following the 296 in the prior year, and that resulted in us being able to reduce our net borrowings further. On an adjusted basis, adjusting for that in-transit cash receipt, net borrowings really down to 86 million, and I've spoken through the debt equity ratio at 8%, and that's after the impairment charge. Moving on to slide 12, just reflecting on that impairment. So the large portion of the impairment relates to rolled products. That's 1.38 billion, 74 million in extrusions. And again, important to note that the underlying cash flows of the business is on track to meet their targets. Although Extrusions is experiencing challenging conditions, Richard will cover that a bit later in some more detail. The main reason for the impairment is that increase in weighted average cost of capital at 3.5%, and you can see Rolled Products there up to 15.6%, Extrusions at 17.1%. The increase in WACC, as Richard mentioned, reflects the higher hurdle rates that we're placing on future investments. I think also talks to the significant change in the geopolitical environment. We've seen a significant change in 2018 versus 2017 to a much more polarized environment, and Hulamin and the aluminium industry in general are highly impacted by these global macro conditions. Just moving on to slide 13, I think it's important just to reflect again on what drives financial performance of Hulamin. And in particular, the slide really covers the Rolled Products business as the largest single segment in the Hulamin group. On the right-hand side, you've got a block for revenue. On the left-hand side, for manufacturing costs and materials. And I think important to note that our revenue consists of a conversion fee for converting primary aluminium into a semi-fabricated product. That conversion fee we would call rolling margin or extruding margin. And revenue would also consist of the aluminium component, in our case, an alloy. And that's priced on the LME as if it were aluminium. And we sell that at market price. The manufacturing costs and materials then consist of the primary aluminium that we procure at markets together with manufacturing costs. I think then the important thing to note is the two items in blue result in some significant FX sensitivity. The conversion costs are mainly rand impacted, whereas the conversion fees are mainly dollar and euro denominated. So our financial results are impacted quite significantly by changes in the exchange rate from period to period. The underlying aluminium price, though, is essentially a pass-through, although there is a metal price lag impact through the P&L between the time of procuring that metal and invoicing that material. That metal price lag effect we have mitigated through the introduction of a 50% metal price lag hedge. That's on the rand price of aluminium. The introduction of the hedge does reduce the P&L volatility, but introduces some cash flow volatility. And I think the point I just want to emphasize around Hulamin's large currency exposure, I've made the point there that exchange rate is really Hulamin's gold price. I think unlike the gold price, the currency over the long term will weaken. It'll weaken by inflation differential certainly over the long term. And we've seen the impact of the currency, I think, quite clearly illustrated in H1's performance versus H2's performance. H1, we had an exchange rate of 12.30 on average, H2 of 14.18, and normalized EPS improved significantly over those two halves due to the effect of the currency. Moving on to slide 14, just having a look at 2018's performance. On the left-hand side, you can see headline EBIT 501 million versus the 2017 of 502 million, so very, very similar. But just breaking down the effects that informed that stable performance at headline EBIT. If one looks at the underlying performance, you can see that's up 24% in constant currency. And that's really what we focus on year in, year out, in terms of improving the business. The currency impact was slight. It was negative. The currency being averaging 13.25 for 2018 versus the 13.32 for 2017. Metal price lag, you would have seen earlier that there was a gain of 150 million in the prior year, 4 million in the current year, so there was a negative effect year on year in terms of price lag. And there was a positive impact in terms of some headline adjustments and some normalizing adjustments of 72 million in 2018 versus 2017. So that's the that's the reconciliation of the effects within headline EBIT. Just looking at the underlying profit performance components, another improvement in 2018 versus 2017, and that was driven by the higher volume levels, also improvement in rolling margins, and again, some improvements in costs, as well as a higher component of scrap material forming part of our input mix. So that has driven underlying performance again up 24% on a constant currency basis. We move over to slide 16. One can see the leveraging effect of the currency. Quite starkly, you've got H2 2018 where the currency averaged 14.18 versus the prior 6 month period, H1, where the currency averaged 12.30, 13.25 for the full year. And if one looks at the second line to bottom of that particular table, one can see that normalized EBITDA and EPS responded quite significantly to the currency half on half. Underlying performance was relatively similar half on half, but at currency levels of 14 Rand and above, one can start to see the performance potential of the business. Just looking at cash flow delivery on slide 17, pleasing to see a much more consistent free cash flow delivery over the last 3 years, and certainly that remains a key focus for the business. And we'll continue to focus on free cash flow to underpin continued strengthening of the balance sheet and allowing us to improve returns to shareholders. I'll then move on to slide 18, what's underpinned that free cash flow delivery in the current year. Certainly the normalized EBIT, of course, that's carried through, but also we've improved net working capital as a percentage of revenue. Again, inventory efficiencies have improved. Capital expenditure remains stable, and we've further reduced our interest charges on the back of reduced debt levels. Just looking at slide 19, you can see the impact that that the initiatives that we introduced in 2016 have had on working capital efficiencies in terms of inventory, and we'll continue to focus on inventory and our cash cycle to drive further working capital efficiencies going forwards. Capital expenditure on slide 20, we believe staying business capex at 2018 levels is appropriate and is responsible, and we continue to target staying business capex at levels around the 2018 levels. Our capital management strategy in slide 21, I think that just summarizes some of the points I've already mentioned. First of all, focusing on consistent and improving operating cash flow generation. We did introduce a change in late 2017 to our metal price lag hedging strategy, where we reduced the FX hedge from 100% to 50%. So that's just on the metal price lag component. And that was to allow a better balance between P&L and cash flow volatility. I did allude to that earlier. And I think we've now got a good balance between the two. In terms of focusing on investment going forwards, Richard mentioned that it is our ambition to apply higher hurdle rates to future investments, improvement capex, etc. And that's a key component of our capital management strategy. We've also introduced measures to improve capital productivity, much more efficient project management, and introduced a more robust post-implementation process. We've strengthened our balance sheet, and I think we've improved our cost of funding We've now have access to appropriate liquidity, and you'll see that just now that we have sufficient uncommitted facilities. The debt that we have is has a high level of flexibility in this covenant light, so it's wholly appropriate for our business. And of course, we're focusing then on providing consistent growing dividends, and any excess cash, we will then return those to shareholders, and particularly where the share price trading as it is now at a significant discount to NAV, we'll then introduce share buybacks alongside a base dividend. Moving on to slide 22, you can see there that there's sufficient headroom in our borrowings as against our total facilities, and that will remain a key tenet of the way that we will handle our balance sheets. Our net debt to equity has risen slightly in 2018, as I mentioned, due to the reduction in equity post the impairment charge. On to slide 23, we've spoken about the dividend already, maybe just a bit more on the share buyback. So we're targeting $60 million for an open market repurchase program that will commence later on this week, and we're targeting up to $5 million per month for March and April in terms of shareholder approvals we obtained at the previous AGM in April. We will again seek shareholder approval at the forthcoming AGM to extend this program to April 2020 until the $60 million has been exhausted. In terms of our medium-term targets that we established at this time last year, this is slide 24. At that time, we put forward a 2022 five-year target that's on the right-hand side of that page, and we also presented a 2018 target that's alongside those numbers. And at the time, we presented our 2017 performance, which I've again presented, together with how we performed in 2018 as against our targets. And pleasing to see that both in terms of sales volumes and conversion fees, we improved against our targets, making progress towards our five-year target in 2022. And we just about met our conversion cost reduction targets, 89 versus 90, and that's cost out on top of the baseline costs in 2017, targeting $300 million, so another $200 over the next few years, and scrap as a percentage of input material, just about reaching our 2018 target, but a good performance over 2017. And net working capital, we continue to make progress, having brought that number down from some 26% over the last few years. So I think that covers it from my side. I'm going to hand back to you, Richard, to cover the 2018 operational review on slide 25.
Thanks, Anton. I'm on slide 26 now, which is the key features of 2018. And in that slide, you can see on the top right our safety performance. We've done a global review of our peers, and certainly the information that we have is that Hulamin Pietermaritzburg operation is the safest aluminium plant that we're aware of in the entire world. Looking across to the bottom left, you see a marginal uptick in US dollar rolling margins, although very much in line with 2016 and 2017. In terms of our product mix split between the various markets, which is the bottom right-hand graph, you can see that we're maintaining our packaging levels, and automotive is also a significant chunk of our business, and the two of them together add up to close to 60% of our total sales, with extrusions and all the other markets combined being the balance. In terms of the local versus export split, you can see that our local market did shrink a little bit, and that really talks to the fact that we have a soft local economy and excess export opportunities for rolled products, even though extrusions is entirely local market-focused business. I'm now moving on to slide 27, which talks to the monthly production performance, and that's where we are very proud of the team back in Pietermaritzburg. And there you can see the very tall buildings that's above the regression, light blue regression line, and talks to the excellent performance in the second half of 2018, where we achieved record production performance in human raw products. Moving on to slide 28, a few comments about the strong sales and production performance, just to remind the audience that human raw products is in a strong selling position, in that we have excess demand for our products compared to our production capability, and therefore the more we produce, the more we sell, as opposed to this reflecting anything particularly outstanding from our sales team. The second half performance of 240,000 tons annualized does talk to a trend that I showed in the previous slide of continuous improvement, lean manufacturing, and some really significant effort that the operations team back in Pietermaritzburg has maintained in recent years. Just a comment that talks to our ability to turn production capability and capacity into sales is that for a number of years now we have maintained the opportunities, what we call spot sales opportunities, where we are able to turn available capacity into cash through the sales cycle at very short notice, and this really talks to our ability to convert this production performance into cash during 2018. Conversion prices, as I mentioned previously, were stable in 2018. However, a part of the ability to, or our performance in 2018 to grow sales as we did to 228,000 tons in raw products was the improvement of yield. And remember, as I've spoken in previous years, yield is the ratio of finished sales, finished tons to start tons, which is a very key measure of efficiency in an aluminium plant. I think an important foundation point is the final one on the slide, which says that our rolling and ingot supply, which is the core and biggest capital assets in our business, do expose opportunities to grow sales to in excess of 250,000 tons, and does expose some of the work that we're doing that I'll talk to later in terms of our growth opportunities. But our rolling and ingot slab supply performance is really the underpin of the volume performance in the business. Just completing the manufacturing performance review for 2018, we had no externally imposed disruptions of any sort, of any significance, should I say, in 2018. We have, as you will recall, diversified our energy supply to include natural gas. We procure about 30 to 40% of our gas requirements in the form of compressed natural gas. We continue to look at broadening our natural gas exposure through converting a retired liquid fuel pipeline. As we all experiencing right now, electricity concerns appear very close, and I'll talk to that a little bit later in the question time, but certainly load shedding and load curtailment, as it particularly applies to Hulamin, is quite a focused issue, and I'll talk about the mitigation plans a little later. Again, just to reflect on a previous era, in the early 2010s, we had a couple of maintenance issues in Hulamin raw products. But our assets care and maintenance program has certainly underpinned a significant portion of our reliability improvement in recent years and is a significant part of the excellent performance in Hulamin raw products in the year past. As I said earlier, our lean manufacturing program is delivering. We are a leader in lean manufacturing, and many of our shop floor and bottom-up approaches are really delivering this 6% year-on-year improvement in raw products, which is quite a significant improvement, even though it's just a single-digit percentage. But as you get to full capacity, so the incremental improvements become more and more difficult. Also proud to say that, as Anton mentioned earlier, we achieved cumulative cost savings of 89 million during the year gone by, which has resulted in a real decline in unit costs of 1.2% after inflation. Our working capital efficiency is stable. As Anton said, the cash cycle improved from 22% to 21%, but it certainly will be a focus for further improvement and cash generation in the year ahead. Moving on to rolling margins, I'm now on slide 30. As you can see, very much in line with previous years, recent years, 2016, 2017. 2018 is going to be a challenging year. We've seen some softness, as I said, in the engineering side of our business, which represents about 30% of our business in the United States. Moving on to slide 31. During the year gone by, duties in the United States were quite a key feature of the volatility in trade regulation in the United States, with some of our Chinese, the products that we compete with that have Chinese origin in the United States coming under significant import duties into the United States, which did result in higher selling prices for Hulamin in the United States as a result of lower supply out of China. But over and above that, we're seeing, as I said earlier, our can stock, remember we're in can body, can end, and can tab, which are the three aluminium roll products component of a beverage can. Those are more than 50%, or close to 50% of our total business in at Hulamin, and we're targeting our can body stock sales to get to close to 50,000 tons by 2022. We have also submitted new rolled products duty application for the South African market following a significant increase in South Africa. The extrusion market, although we do have 10% import duty there, is clearly insufficient to protect Hulamin and our competitor from the significant surge in imports into South Africa, and we are asking the government to increase the import duty on extruded products as well. Although our application was submitted in mid-2018 for rolled products, with 2019 being a election year, it seems unlikely that we'll hear any outcome of either of those two duty applications until significantly after the election, the national rule general election later this second quarter. Moving on to slide number 32, where we look at the US dollar against the rand versus the inflation index. There you can see the consistent pressure on our costs that we see from the light blue line, which is the inflation index, compared to the light green line, which is the conversion of our US dollar selling prices into rands. And there you can see that from kind of mid-2016, the rand has been relatively stable, although you can see in 2018 it did weaken quite sharply in the second half of the year. And as a consequence, the inflation index in this particular graph has therefore overtaken the currency, and this remains the key uncertainty in our ability to forecast our performance going forward. Moving on to our operating margin, there you can see the gray block represents our operating margin, which is the differential between our selling price in top of the gray line and our unit cost in rands, and that did open up slightly in the year gone by. And we will continue to focus on taking costs out, as Anton mentioned, in order to reduce the blue section and improve our operating margin. Moving on to slide 34, our cost focus in 2018 focused on a number of areas, notably operating supplies. These are the consumables generally that we use in the production of aluminium products, down 1.4% in nominal terms and close to 7% in real terms after allowing for inflation. Likewise, we managed to eke out a 1.6% real term cost saving in spite of the significant increase in volume in packaging materials. And we will continue to focus on usage efficiency where our gigajoules per ton or the quantum of energy that we use per ton did improve quite significantly in 2018. However, we are subject to significant electricity price increases, as we all know, as we're all subject to, as well as the currency effect on gas, which does affect our LPG prices as they converted from US dollars. So moving on to a graph that I've shared with you in recent years, which is our manufacturing cost split between materials, energy, manpower, and consumables. The split remains pretty stable in compared to recent years. We have, however, identified some opportunities on the manpower side, so that will be a renewed focus for us going forward. Moving on to slide 36, which is a review of Hulamin Extrusions. A poor year from Hulamin Extrusions in a stagnant local market. The market has come under price pressure. Unfortunately, that business did face a breakdown of one of its four extrusion presses in the first quarter, which negatively affected its sales volumes. This business being a significantly exposed to and volume sensitive business was unable to return to profitability after a very poor first quarter in which it incurred a significant loss. We did, however, successfully commission our new powder coating plant in that same period. Looking forward to 2019, we clearly can't tolerate the losses that have been incurred in extrusions, and as a consequence, under my leadership, we are reviewing our strategic participation or ownership of Hulamin Extrusions and looking at how we can significantly turn that business around, and we will be able to most likely make some further announcements during the course of this year as to how we're going to do that. We are continually looking to extend various sales opportunities in that business. Currently in focus are a number of solar and automotive opportunities, and as well as increasing the safeguard duties that could be in place remains a focus of us to turn that business around while the strategic review is underway. I'm now moving on to slide 37 and 38. As I've said in recent years, we are looking at how we can expand the business beyond its current rolled product extrusions and containers exposure. We've spent many hours in 2018, and I'm very pleased to say that we presented a growth strategy to the board in mid-year of 2018, which was approved, and I'm now going to give you some color as to what our plans are for 2018-19 and beyond, and how we will start to deliver results in the 2019 financials should reflect some of this growth and further as we go forward. We've done a review, the basis for growth, why is growth necessary there? We've exposed some of our thinking, certainly some of our volumes in certain specific product lines. We just cannot get the economies of scale that some of our competitors are able to achieve, and therefore we're probably going to have to exit some of the product lines that are currently being produced in Pietermaritzburg. We have certain capacity limitations on some of our higher profitability products, and we will be looking to expand some of that going forward. We are a multi-product plant, and I think we have realized that there's a significant cost of complexity, that there are numerous opportunities for us to simplify the business and therefore reduce those hidden costs of complexity. Structurally, we are exposed to a relatively high inflation cost, and we don't plan to rely on the weakening of the rand to counteract those rising domestic costs and the ever-increasing demand for wage increases from all our employees. We do have a long cash cycle in our exports, and likewise we have a pretty high cost of capital, particularly in comparison to some of our subsidized competitors in other parts of the world. I'm specifically looking east there, both in the Middle East and further east in Asia. Some of our strengths, we have a very efficient manufacturing plant, and that really has been illustrated through some of the record performance that you've seen in recent years, that improving trajectory. We have a globally renowned can stock reputation for technical service, which really is the technical interface between the rolling mill and the customer, and that is a significant opportunity that we will be capitalizing on in the year ahead to deliver further profit pool access and growth in revenue and profitability going forward. Our reputation for quality and service is right at the top end of the market in the beverage can material, and likewise in heat treat plates. We have a similar reputation, particularly in the automotive area, where our heat treat plate capability is globally respected, and particularly in the automotive field, as the automotive field expands into and converts into other forms of propulsion other than internal combustion engines, our exposure to electric vehicles will stand us in extremely good stead there. The fact that we have a globally respected brand, the fact that we are located in Africa where beverage can consumption is projected to grow in double figures is a real foundation for growth, and I'll talk about that a little bit more as we go forward. Particularly as the tailwind supporting the consumption of aluminium in beverage cans is well underway, particularly with concerns around plastics, as I mentioned earlier, and the consumption of aluminium in cars going forward as lightweighting becomes more important. These are some significant opportunities with our historic exposure and reputation in both of those markets that will be our focus going forward. Strong forecast, as I said, for aluminium consumption in Africa, and I think I'll leave the rest of the slides for you to read in your own time. But just to reflect on what we've said previously in terms of our strategy, strengthening the core, which is the core manufacturing operation, based on operational efficiencies, cost competitiveness, productivity, risk management, and you've seen the results of that in 2018 and in prior years. I'm very pleased and proud of being able to say that our operations core is really the basis from which we can grow the brand and grow the business. We continue to focus on improving rolling margins, and that we will do through a narrow focus going forward where our strongest reputation and our most highly regarded brands are in cans and cars, which will be the focus of our growth plans going forward. And then we will be looking at certain capital assets to complement this growth, some of the growth will be capital intensive, however much of it will not be capital intensive, and I'll talk a little bit more about that going forward. But certainly the cash generation, the billion rand cash that we've generated in the last 3 years has given us the platform from which we can look at a further capital investment program. I'm now moving on to slide 40 to specifically talk about some of the growth areas that we are implementing through 2018 and into 2019. We've done some quite technical modeling of our business of a more simplified Hulamin Roll product, with doing more of our core and successful products and less of our peripheral products. And that those numbers do look attractive. The simplification of Roll products will allow us to reduce costs further, will allow us to focus on some of our core competencies, as I mentioned earlier, which would be more of a focus on automotive and electric vehicles, which is based on our existing exposure. We have reopened a feasibility study that looks like it's morphing into, although it was an auto body sheet investigation that we did in 2015 and 2016, that did not yield a attractive investment, and particularly with our higher weighted average cost of capital hurdle rate, that previous project certainly will not be brought back. But looking at it differently and with a different product mix and its impact on the entire business, we are hopeful that that could yield very attractive returns. And that detailed feasibility study is underway, and we will be, assuming that it is attractive, we will be bringing that back to the board later in 2019. The second component of our growth strategy is a low capital intensive sales volume growth. We have entered into an agency agreement with an Asian beverage can mill, and we will be selling from 2019 and onwards sales of predominantly canned body stock, but certainly other canned products to our existing customers, leveraging our technical service capability, which is globally renowned. And this, although it's not being called that, it is de facto a license agreement. So we will be licensing the low-cost canned plants, canned products, and we will be selling them under our banner to some of our existing customers. And the first offtake agreement is being penciled in, and we'll go to the board shortly. But that is looking like a significant opportunity for us to expand our sales, sales volumes, profitability, and cash flows in 2019. Will be the first exposure of that, but significantly more in coming years. We are also looking at some feasibility studies for local manufacture of some roll product intensive products. These are specific to cans and cars, and I'll be able to share more of that as these feasibility studies are concluded. We have three particular feasibility studies that are in detail underway as we speak. As I said, those should be, we'll be able to give some clarity on what those are during the course of 2019. The fourth component of our new growth strategy is to look at expanding our sales into Africa. We are taking the first step in that direction with the point two, as I mentioned above. But a key component of that will be to capture the scrap that is available in Africa, the aluminium beverage can scrap that is, and utilizing that as a input material into the manufacture of other aluminium roll products that are currently being consumed, and we will therefore be able to create further moats around the African market and use it as a leverage to grow our manufacturing platform potentially as we explore this opportunity further. We have no specific capital allocation plans under option four. It's purely a operational scrap availability and exploratory channel at the moment. But as that comes to fruition, so we will bring that back to the board in future. I'm now moving on to slide 41. And this is really the closing part of my presentation where just to look at the year ahead. The prospects for 2019 are to maintain the growth momentum and the operational performance momentum that we have commenced in recent years. As I said, the youth engineering market, which is less than 50% of our business, does appear to be slowing down. The aerospace market has a spin-off into Hulamin's market for heat treat plate in the United States. U.S. GDP confidence seems to be waning, and therefore our customers are being a little bit more cautious in the United States, in the engineering market. 2019 is also an important year for Hulamin and its negotiation with Hillside for ongoing aluminum supply. Our supply of liquid aluminium and solid aluminium to both our Richards Bay and Pietermaritzburg operations comes to an end this year, and we are deeply engaged with South32 on the next extension to this contract, which is contingent on electricity supply. It's obviously not a good time this week to be talking about electricity supply to Hillside, but as we all know, electricity supply is a key focus of government and Eskom, and I remain optimistic that sense will prevail and that new electricity supply deal will be facilitated between Eskom and South32 that will spin off into a aluminium supply offtake agreement between Hulamin and Hillside. We're forecasting that the local market, other than the beverage can market, will remain soft. But we are pretty excited about the packaging demand for beverage can material, as many of our Western competitors have already converted the capacity from cost. The supply-demand balance is strongly in our favor. And in addition to that, our opening up of additional sales through licensed resales from our Asian partner will enable us to capitalize on this beverage can growth going forward. I think that's the end of what I want to share with you. I do have some questions that I've received from a shareholder by text message. So before I hand over to the audience for specific questions, I'll just comment on three specific questions. One is the Eskom risk, it's load shedding. Our electricity usage and carbon taxes. The carbon tax question I'll hand over to Anton, but the first two I'll just comment on briefly, and that is that although Hulamin is a significant electricity user, we are not a particularly heavy baseline user of electricity, so our electricity exposure is largely in a very short-term, high-intensity what we call maximum demand usage. So our usage spikes up for a couple of seconds as an ingot hits the rolling mill and then goes down to fairly low levels. So our electricity usage is, although a significant component of our business, a large portion of that is maximum demand. During periods of load shedding that we all experience as consumers of electricity, human and large industrial users are exposed to what we call load curtailment, as exposed to load shedding, where the significant difference is that in load shedding, the lights go off and electricity supply is terminated for the period of the load shedding. For large industrial users like Hulamin, we are exposed to what's known as load curtailment, where we are contacted by Eskom, and the request is that we reduce our usage between 10 and 20%, depending on the level. So level 4 would be 20%, and level 2 would be 10%. And what that enables us to do is that enables us to keep our key bottleneck equipment up and running during the periods of load curtailment, and we are able to assist Eskom in sometimes going beyond the minimum level of load reduction in the peripheral items of equipment that are not bottlenecks, and therefore the impact on the overall business is less than the 10% or 20% that we experience, because we are able to catch up in some of the non-bottleneck items of equipment. So far it has been disruptive, but as I said, not anywhere near the levels that we've seen recently. We also have a program to generate our own electricity, and that enables us to further minimize the impact during these load curtailment and load reduction periods that I mentioned earlier. Anton, can you please comment on the carbon tax exposure that Hulamin has?
Well, thank you, Richard. So we expect the carbon tax to be effective during the course of 2019, and our exposure based on the current bill and our scope 1, which is our direct emissions, would be less than 5 million rand per annum. The pass-through effects from electricity, we believe, will not occur in the short term, and if those were to occur, of course, that would impact all industries across South Africa. But we're not a high energy electricity intensive business, so it would not be a large exposure should that come through. So that's in summary the impact of carbon tax. Hulamin continues to improve its scope 1 emissions. We've made good progress over the last few years, and our resource efficiency program has identified a number of further initiatives to improve our energy consumption and therefore reduce our carbon emissions over the next few years.
Thanks, Anton. I'd like to now open the question time to anyone who's dialed in who might have any questions. If you don't mind just identifying yourself first.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star then 1 on your touchtone phone, and that'll place you in the question queue. If, however, you decide to withdraw the question, you're welcome to press star then 2 on your touchtone phone to remove yourself from the question queue. And just a reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then 1. The first question comes from Tim Clark from Standard Bank.
Hello, good afternoon. Firstly, congratulations on the cash flow result. I thought it was very good. Just a few questions from me. The first one is just the logic of doing a buyback versus increasing the dividend payout. My sense would be that a higher yield would help you to achieve a re-rating. I appreciate that you find the stock particularly cheaper in relation to the book value. The second one is in relation to that book value. I find the impairment perplexing, to be frank. Your free cash generation looks fine. You're de-gearing. You're generating cash. And I listened carefully, and I think you said that, you know, that it was to do with a higher hurdle rate for future projects and future cash flows. I mean, the hurdle rates there, the WACs that you've got there, look very look quite high to me relative to what I see across the whole industry. And you're certainly the first company I've ever come across that's increased its WAC in South Africa. So it's not some kind of general trend, and therefore reduced the book value. So it seems perplexing to me. So perhaps you can just explain to me, because it's a bit odd. And then just on the Hillside agreement, the third question, just the contingency on Hillside. What's your plan on if they don't sign up? I mean, I think it looks like Eskom are in a bit of a state of panic, perhaps is the right word. They've got a lot of units down, and they're working hard to fix everything and get things working. I doubt that they're going to be looking at signing contracts and agreeing things, and it looks like these issues could be, you know, could last some time. So I just wonder if you could talk to what happens if they don't sign a Hillside contract, what contingency you've got, what the business will do. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Anton, would you be happy to answer the first two questions, and then maybe if you hand back to me, and I'll talk about the electricity and Hillside dependence.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Richard. So, as we've indicated, our target over the medium term is certainly dividends at a five times HEPS cover, and three times cover, and we have improved that to now five times cover. We do believe that the NAV and share price differential does encourage us to return cash via a share repurchase. I think the other point I'd mention is that we have an ESOP and a Black Economic Empowerment transaction that matures in 2020, and we'll be holding these shares in treasury to accommodate the vesting of those transactions. So I think those are the reasons for the buyback. Yep. Okay. And then I think, sorry, your second question, just remind me of that one.
Just this impairment. I mean, if I look at your operational measures are all good, right? And you've showed us all those. I don't need to repeat them to you. And yet you're putting a big impairment through. And the logic, I just listened carefully, and I think I heard you say higher hurdle rate for future projects and future cash flows, which seemed extraordinarily odd to me.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. So you're quite right. I think, and in terms of underlying performance, I think we're seeing the improvements against our targets, and we've set out the 2022 targets. So I think we're on track there. As you say, what's really driven it is the higher weighted average cost of capital, and underpinning that, I think, is both this desire to ensure that we set appropriate hurdle rates for new investment. I think the other point is that we have seen that the world has changed quite dramatically in 2018 versus 2017. That impacts our business quite significantly. Macro, we're very exposed to macro effects, global macro effects, things like Brent crude, things like the currency, things like tariff issues, etc. Impact the aluminium price, impact our conversion margins in different industries. So we've increased our specific risk premium that's included in the weighted average cost of capital. We've also seen an increase in the risk-free rates, as well as we've seen the target debt equity ratios that we utilize in our capital asset pricing model to determine our cost of equity. We've seen that increase, which reflects some of these global uncertainties impacting our peer group. So in terms of the IS36 theory, we believe that's the correct approach, and that's informed the increase in weighted average cost of capital.
All right. As I said, it feels odd to me, but that's fine. All right, and then just Hillside?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I'll just respond on that one. I think the simple answer is that there's no doubt that Hulamin and Hillside are attached at the hip. So we have a cast house in Richards Bay that is a joint venture between ourselves and a BE partner called Isizinda. And that cast house is, although it's on the gas pipeline and therefore has access to competitively priced energy, it does receive both liquid and solid aluminium from Hillside. In Pietermaritzburg, we get solid aluminium from Hillside. What the implications of that are is that if Hillside were to close, first of all, it would be an asset that probably will never come back to South Africa. But Hulamin could, and primary aluminium is a global commodity that's readily available in all markets. So we could quite easily buy solid aluminium, it's known as P1020 or pig ingots, in the open market. It's readily available. There would clearly be a commercial penalty attached to that, but we would certainly, our sort of operational strategy, mitigation strategy, is to optimize our Isizinda operation to utilize the competitively priced energy to ensure that Hulamin maintains its local market presence. However, with the long export cash cycle that we have with our exports, we would have to most likely rationalize the business, reduce the size of the business, liquidate the working capital, and shrink the business in order to maintain the sustainability of the commercial sustainability of the business. So to think that you can import raw aluminium and re-export it with long cash cycles is going to be challenging and will most likely require at least a 25% scale down in Hulamin operations.
Thank you. That answers the question. Thanks very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. The next question comes from Kabelo Moshesha of Renaissance Capital. Kabelo, your line is open. You can ask your question.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. Earlier this year, I just have two questions on my side. Earlier this year, there was an announcement that there was a new competitor to Nampak, potentially coming from Africa and looking to enter the South African market. Just if you could please sort of give us an indication of what those that would mean for Hulamin's volumes. And then the second one, in terms of your Tesla exports, they also announced production shuts. How does that impact your volumes? And then potentially with the Model Y coming through, is the current environment not favorable or feasible, given you're not really participating in the Model 3 volumes? Is it unlikely that you would also not participate in the Model Y volumes as well? Those are the two main questions from my side.
Yeah, thanks, Kabelo. Just a couple of comments, adding a bit more color to what I said earlier about the strength in the beverage can market. I think it's common cause that single-use plastics are related to significant environmental concerns, particularly related to the oceans and the volumes of single-use plastics that find their way into the oceans. As a result, we're seeing many applications for plastics being scaled down, and these things normally start in the first world. We're seeing significant scale down in the use of plastics as a beverage packaging material in Europe and the United States and Japan. Our customers there are putting us under quite a lot of pressure to negotiate new long-term agreements. This trend is not escaping South Africa. South Africa has two beverage can manufacturers as we speak, with a third one, as you did mention, to our knowledge starting up. We are in detailed contractual supply negotiations with the third supplier of beverage cans, and we look forward to a competitive beverage can market where aluminium beverage cans in Africa are the preferred material for beverage packaging, and we certainly treat the entire African market as our home ground, and we will defend it through various means, and I've illustrated some of those already. Scrap, introducing additional volume into the market through what's pretty much a licensing agreement, so that we can capitalize on those. Your second question, I don't know if I've answered your question. I'm not sure specifically what the question was around, but yes, we can confirm that we are in contractual discussions with the third beverage can manufacturer in South Africa.
Sure. Just to add a bit more detail, so from my perspective, what it could mean is lost volumes for Nampak, which impacts your volumes. Would that translate into potential gains with a competitor, or is it just broadly lost volumes from your perspective? And I guess you spoke to the other part where net the market is growing for cans. Maybe what what I'm reading into it, there's potential for even the competitor to enter, and then the net loss in Nampak's volume not being significant. Am I correct in that in saying that?
I think what I can say, and I have to be very careful about talking about any one of my specific customers because they're all exceedingly important to us. What I can say is that the underlying growth in beverage can consumption, we are very much planning to show the same growth in our domestic sales of can stock in line with underlying market growth. So that's very much, and even our plans currently are showing that we should exceed, we should grow our exposure to beverage can material through this additional profit pool that I mentioned earlier, which is the resale of another mill's can stock under what's pretty much a license agreement going forward.
Yeah,
moving
thank
on
you.
To the electric vehicle question, and again, I'm really reluctant to talk about specific customer relationships because they are subject to confidentiality agreements. We are seeing some shifts in our sales in the United States. What I can say is that we are in discussions with a number of non-passenger vehicle customers to capitalize on our passenger vehicle experience. But yes, there are in the public domain numerous model changes at our largest customer in the United States, bearing in mind that that particular customer is quite a small portion, less than 5% of our total sales and less than 20% of our heat sheet plate sales. But such is the nature of our relationship with that particular customer that we are pretty excited about additional opportunities for us with that customer going forward. So we certainly are planning to invest in further exposure to that particular market.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a final reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. Gentlemen, we have no further questions in the queue. Do you have any closing comments?
No, there's no, nothing to add. Thank you very much.
Apologies, sir. We've just got a follow-up question from Cabello. Please go ahead.
Yes. So, just a quick question then. Two questions from my side. Just in terms of conversion margins, I see in the last half they actually did come off slightly. Do you mind sort of giving us a bit more color on what drove that normalization or that correction? And then the second question is on the CapEx. Just you've announced a few growth initiatives and some of them are still in the pre-feasibility phase. 2019, not from what I could see in the slides, nothing really planned in terms of growth capex or significant growth capex. What should we be putting into our numbers if we are going to give you the benefit of the 250 kilotons in growth? What is the capex that should follow that?
Yeah, so the first question around the rolling margins, as I mentioned in a couple of the slides, when the rolling mill performs beyond its planned capacity, we have the ability to convert that into the so-called spot sales, which are, if this week the mill produces its allocation by Sunday lunchtime that was only planned to finish production by Sunday night, we've got the ability to use those 12 hours to add what we call commodity or standard products into the mix, and we can convert those almost immediately into sales. The problem is that they come at a slight discount. The reality is that in the second half of 2018, the mill performed beyond our planned capacity, and therefore the quantum of the spot sales was above what we had thought would be the case, and therefore had a slight impact on the weighted average selling price in the second half. So that's the fairly simple explanation for that. Sorry, Cabello, the second part of the question, I just was trying to write it down, but I've lost my train of thought now. Do you mind repeating the second question?
Sure, no problem. So the second part, I just asked around your CapEx. You mentioned a few growth projects and most of them being in pre-feasibility phase. But then post-2020, what should we be putting into our models to give you the benefit of the growth in volumes that you've sort of guiding where you're targeting the 250 kilotons?
Yeah. So certainly 2019 would be pretty similar to our recent history. So that sort of 200 to 250 million staying business capex. But as we've said, we will be even more demanding about capital allocation going forward. 2020 and beyond, we are likely to embark on some further capital expansion. However, I'm not yet at liberty to talk specific numbers there. But I think if you watch the space, we will in due course and potentially even as early as the second half of this year, we may be able to make some announcements.
Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, that was the final question. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.